Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's Shake Them Ropes. I didn't look up the episode before we got started, but my name is Chris Novembrino, and joining me, as always, is Jeff Hawkins. Jeff, do you care to guess what episode it is?
I believe it's like 327.
No, it can't be 327. I think it's probably 329. If I had to take a guess, it's episode 329. But we're here to discuss Raw and SmackDown. Jeff, is there anything in the news section before we get started?
Chris, it is March Madness week. Who cares about wrestling when the NCAA basketball tournament and the greatest good guys, the biggest underdog babyfaces, the Kofi Kingstons of the tournament, your Virginia Cavaliers, actually my Virginia Cavaliers, as the only proponent of an actual school who went there, Bruce Mitchell of the Torch roots for Duke, didn't go to Duke, rich fan of the Torch, married a Dukie. Every wrestling fan should be rooting for the Virginia Cavaliers to win the NCAA tournament, mostly to make me happy.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're trying to capture my heart and my imagination with this. I have no strong leanings as we go into March Madness.
If you don't like college basketball, you're not going to be into it. But if you like college basketball, this is the best time of year.
Well, this is an exciting time for me because this is when I follow names that might end up in next year's fantasy basketball draft, and I also finish out my season, and we get ready to get to the payday of the season, which this was a productive one for old Chris, so I'm happy about that.
But to your question, after my flagrant self-involved rant there, AJ Styles has re-signed with the WWE. That's... I don't find that surprising.
I don't find it all that surprising either. He has a nice high-profile position here. He will almost certainly remain in the title picture for the rest of his duration here in WWE. Maybe at some point be like an Intercontinental Champion, but they've been taking good care of him. I mean, obviously there was some speculation that he might go to AEW. But if you look at what Styles has been getting out of his relationship with WWE, both in terms of treatment on air and then also paydays versus other people, let's say Anderson and Gallows, it makes some sense that they might want to move onward, other than, of course, the contract was massive in their case. But in the case of AJ, everything's right. He gets treated well on TV and he's getting paid well.
He's making seven figures. He's over the age of 40. He gets just enough creative freedom to be happy. I mean, everybody's like saying, well, think of the great matches he could have. Yeah, well, at some point.
He's got a little too creative here tonight with the There Can Only Be One t-shirt. I don't know if you saw that. I think the Highlander might want to speak to him. Yeah.
Huh. Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like, yeah, but as an artist, he's made his art. He did it in New Japan, and that's why he did it, was to get these big paydays stateside so he could be around the family, set them up for life. I have no problem with him staying in the WWE. I think he's a positive influence there. I know it was so weird because this time last year, we're all excited about the Nakamura WrestleMania program that inevitably turned disappointing.
Sometimes you just have to look at the calendar and realize that many years have passed. That New Japan run for all of these guys is more than 5 years in the rearview mirror for most of them.
Not to be a complete crass cynic, but you know what? All your five-star ratings aren't going to put money in the bank. So you go with where the money is, and AJ did.
Yeah, and you also go with what you can do at this point, too. But yeah, it makes all the sense in the world to me that AJ Styles will resign. I imagine he will maybe go over to Raw at some point after this. It seems like he might get shuffled around, although he is so closely associated with SmackDown in his identity, the face that runs the place, and, you know, I made this brand or whatever. Of course, WWE can throw that down the memory hole, but that does seem to be a thing they like to go back to with AJ Styles. So he might be kind of a flagship talent for SmackDown.
And the other thing, everybody's kind of a flutter because they think, well, there's going to be 18 matches on WrestleMania this year or something like that. I think the number is 17. It's some ridiculous number. We just got another match today. And you know why I don't care, Chris?
Why not?
Because because I'm not going to be there live, and it's going to be on TV, and I can stop it at any time and walk away and come back to it.
7 or 8 hours is a long day. There's a reason why, you know, they call that work in most contexts, because 7 or 8 hours of watching anything it's a lot. Take it from Jeff and I, who watch a lot of wrestling on a weekly basis. That's a lot of wrestling.
You guys,
especially to watch
you guys
it all at once.
You heard my rant about the Royal Rumble. I will not do those stadium shows again for that long. I just won't. They don't prepare for them well enough. Now, if you're a WWE diehard, more power to you.
And if you've never been to a WrestleMania,
yes,
you should do it once in your life so that you can say that you did it. That's, of course, that's a logical thing to do. And if you're someone who wants to say that you've done all the big pay-per-views, by all means, do it. We're just saying, in terms of an experience, when you're not trying to finish off something on a checklist, it's a process, man. It's work.
That first WrestleMania I went to in Dallas, that was something. And I still have memories of a lot of it around there. So, yeah.
Entering that WrestleMania was a process. By the time we got to our seat,
yeah,
that I was actually – there was a while before the wrestling started, and it was good because it was like I felt like a cow getting moved through a corral here, you know. For about an hour and a half, you're slowly shuffling your way to a seat.
I'm going to ask a question in the ether, and I've been struggling with my opinion on this. Is the build for this WWE WrestleMania good? And I don't know. I honestly don't know. Because a lot of me says no, but a lot of that's me kind of being the snarky, cynical, lifelong fan who watches this and thinks it's mostly dumb.
I think it's overwritten, and as such, it's underperforming. But the general idea of things on paper, especially when you pull the camera out to 30,000 feet, is good. Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey is an interesting and intriguing angle. Charlotte's insertion and all of the other stuff has made it convoluted. Kofi Kingston getting this big push at WrestleMania is interesting, and I'd even say good, but some of the ways that they've gone about doing it, as we're going to get into when we talk about SmackDown, have been, I don't know, not my choices, and I think that has hurt its ability to connect with the audience. But it's not as though, when I say that it's completely missing, this is a total dud, the audience is crapping all over every minute of every second of this television. I just think that done differently, it could be a little hotter, and you see a lot of indicators in the audience that they're not always necessarily following the beats.
So the card, okay, so your argument is the card is good, it's just not the week-to-week build stinks.
Yes.
Okay. I just think, and for me, the build makes the card. That's my issue. I'm looking forward to most of these matches still, but I'm just like watching this and going, it's weird because for me, interest in the matches is going down because of the build versus the other way around.
I agree with that. That's not actually a dissimilar position from me. I think that if they were doing this a different way, you'd be more interested in this card.
Yeah, I'll give you a prime example. I have no faith now that Seth Rollins is going to beat Brock Lesnar. I have decided after that ending on Raw, they would not do that to a guy who is going to win big. The distraction finish based on
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Stupid baby face syndrome. I think if this was a guy, if this was a guy in the vein of Roman, for example, Brock would have beaten him down and rolled him in the ring to be pinned rather than music. And Seth is so focused on that guy that he doesn't realize that Drew McIntyre's gotten up. I viewed this as a step back for that program.
I agree with you on that. However, I think what is being done there is a little bit different. I think the plan is to get Drew McIntyre into the title picture post-Mania. And what they want to do is plant a seed now. And that seed is Drew McIntyre's got the pinfall victory over Seth Rollins, albeit with this giant asterisk. And I think that it actually, in my mind, it actually made it more likely that Seth Rollins is going to beat Brock Lesnar. And this is also sort of a very Vince move of beat the guy a little bit as he's going in to make it seem like it's impossible that he could possibly overcome the big obstacle at WrestleMania. In Vince's mind, this is making Seth Rollins' defeat of Brock Lesnar even more improbable.
I understand your logic on this. And here's where I'm going to give some pushback. We are on Sunday, 2 weeks out from WrestleMania. This is where your programs need to be humming.
I agree.
If you were going to plant this seed, it needed to be a couple weeks ago.
I agree with that.
In my opinion. And it's just one of those things where it's like, now it's kind of like, and this is a problem across the board with the triple threat match, with the Kofi thing. It's just one of those things where it's like, we're still building here, and it's almost like the time we're going to ignite it is the go-home show.
With WrestleMania, at least in years past, I think part of the reason it has the bigness is not just that you've made it 8 hours or 24 hours straight of wrestling. It's that this is the part of the year where they put in the 12-week and 8-week storylines, and we have a big payoff of those storylines at WrestleMania, and that is to what you were saying earlier and why you feel a little cold on this WrestleMania. It's part of what makes you feel big. You're invested in the story. You've been following the twists and turns of it, and so when it pays off at WrestleMania, it's really interesting. Like, you know, what's a really good example of this? And how the build is bigger than the match. Kane versus The Undertaker. The first Kane versus The Undertaker match. If you go back and you watch that WrestleMania, before that match, which at least to my eyes is not very good, there is an excellent video recap taking you through the twists and turns of that angle. So by the time The Undertaker and Kane had that match, you wanted to see it happen, especially since we had never really seen The Undertaker and Kane lock horns at that point. And especially if you weren't watching with the super discerning eye, it probably was really good to you.
Okay. No, I understand your point. I'm also processing a few different things at once here, because it's weird how many of these baby faces in these stories. The story is, I'm a good employee. I've sacrificed so much to work for this company that treats me like garbage, and now I want my moment. And I'm just like, all I'm thinking of during these promos, like especially during like the Kofi one where he said he missed his kids, you know, tooths being out and birthdays, and The Miz talking about, you know, being on the road instead of with his family. I'm like, the people you work for are jerks, and they're the ones presenting this entire thing. It kills me how much of this.
At some point, you want an employee mutiny. The way they keep pressing the button with management is awful, and not just like bad, but like really, really, really bad.
Man, I work in a crappy company that keeps me away from my family so long and so hard.
Treat some of the nicest people around here like absolute human garbage, and rewards other people who are bad people seemingly for their own pleasure.
It's like, well, here's a belt. Oh, but I love this company so much.
I love this brand.
Yeah. I love being a sports entertainer.
Love the brand, hate the company. Love the brand, hate the company.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating. I was a little frustrated by the, in the same vein, the Dave Bautista promo, where I'm like, I'm waiting for the heat, and all he's telling me, I watched that
this
promo.
This has gotten colder week over week for me.
Chris, I was confused as to whether or not I was supposed to like or hate Triple H after that promo.
Yeah, I had that same reaction where I was like, but this is... Sometimes you can recall history too closely as a heel, and it actually ends up hurting the baby face. And you kind of saw that a little bit too with Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston, because Daniel Bryan's logic really did sort of poke a hole in the whole Kofi Kingston story of, yeah, this guy really, he's gotten his shot. Like there was no grave injustice done to Kofi Kingston. He had a lucky break. He had a valiant showing, and you could certainly say he took advantage of the opportunity, but he came up short, and here we are now. And you kind of saw that same sort of, but this is kind of grounded in the truth when Batista says this experience when he was talking about Triple H.
Well, let's table the Kofi Daniel Bryan one.
Right. Yeah, we can put that aside for a second.
Because I love that.
I just wanted to bring that up.
No, I had the same thought. But with the Dave thing, he goes, come on, we all know what Hunter was like in the back kind of thing. And you're like, yeah. Yeah, he buried CM Punk. He buried everybody when he was part of D-Generation X. He kept guys around and used them.
The Reign of Terror is a specific time that's referred to, yeah.
And then after that, Michael Cole goes, well, he's always been fair to me. And I was like, was that supposed to redeem him in our eyes? Was that supposed to be the moment where we all turned and said, boo Dave Batista, boo you for talking about this great man who gives people fair chances.
Michael
boo
Cole as
a
the
pox
voice
on your house.
Michael Cole as the voice of objective moral clarity all of a sudden on this show. I mean, yes, we've talked about this. We watch a lot of territorial stuff, and there's certain announcers who have that function. Michael Cole is not one of them. That is not how he's used on the show. And if you don't do that week in, week out, it means nothing because it's all about credibility.
He's always been fair to me. That's only making Dave's point.
Yeah, Michael Cole still regularly gets booed when he comes out before Raw starts. When they're doing Michael Cole's theme song, people boo him. He's not like a voice that is trusted among the crowd. They don't like hate him, but he's not beloved.
I just don't know if this is just an overall problem with wrestling where they feel like they have to toe that line of reality.
I just don't think
they
think all that hard, right? Like it's Ronda Rousey or who was it saying they? No, it was Beth Phoenix saying that a dragon was awoken inside of her.
Yes,
like that's just lazy.
Yeah, it was. I was like, oh, you've awoken a dragon in me. It's
how
like,
about another mythical flying thing that is breathing fire, perhaps? If only there was such a creature.
I'm going to challenge you to a fight, point to sign, at WrestleMania. Yeah, it's just, it's all, I mean, you're already three steps ahead of every promo on this show before you get there. But man, that one, that's the one that really stuck out because I was like, okay, here comes Dave. Hipster Dave, fashionista Batista, you know, ready to cut an angry promo at Hunter for all the years he was in WWE and stuff like that. It's
I'm
like,
not really clear why we had to beat the hell out of Ric Flair either, just in terms of Batista's motivations. This was just to get Triple H's attention, but what did Ric Flair do to him?
All he ever did was be nice to him during all the promos and stuff. Oh, I attacked him to get to you, Hunter. Whereas, and then he comes out the next week and he just says, give me what I want, and Hunter does
thing,
it.
Thing, but there has to be a logic to it.
Yeah, I'm amazed when they tell me, yeah, they were writing this show up until camera time. I'm like,
when did they start it, though?
You know, it's paint by numbers, guys. I mean, Vince has a script and he goes with it. I just but the Batista one got me out. The Beth Phoenix promo was, oh man, that was just cringeworthy because there's so much to do there because Natty.
They pulled the intrigue out of her. I was super excited to see what Beth was going to say and just the interaction with Bayley and Sasha, and those four stood in the ring and might as well have just blinked at each other for 5 minutes.
Yeah, Natty's been the heel face. Depending on who's there and who her friends are, and she's just never been an interesting enough character to warrant that kind of anger at someone slighting But the Sasha thing wasn't very good either. That's just the weird thing. It's just the entire conversation was scripted as superhero monologues that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, Bailey and Sasha as these fighting champions, and then they go and lose to the Iconics, which I think will set up a title match somewhere down the line. But to your point, when you're talking about kind of weak booking, that was weird considering you've got Bailey and Sasha going into this match against Natty and Beth Phoenix, who are going to be put over as like a very strong, formidable veteran team. Tamina and Nia are going to be presented as monsters as well. So you want Bailey and Sasha looking strong going into that match. And I don't necessarily know that having them lose to the Iconics was the right move.
Yeah, add the Iconics to the match. Keep these women away from each other. Have them talk about each other and just go with it. It's going to be a four-way, and I just assume the Iconics are getting pinned by someone who aren't Bailey and Sasha at this point.
Oh, and that's what's going to result in Bailey and Sasha losing the title. That makes sense.
Somehow. I think maybe for a short run with Beth and Natty, and maybe they lose it on the Raw afterwards back to them so that they can
You might
then
have this
have
backwards.
Matches.
It might be the Iconics pin Natty, and that's how they end up with the titles.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to go that. But We'll watch
discuss
the next
WrestleMania.
Week,
yeah, we'll watch the next week here, but I think you're probably right that they end up in that match.
Oh, yeah, because they pinned the champs. So
yes.
Exactly.
So you want to talk about Finn Balor and Braun Strowman, that tag team that has captured the imagination, defeating Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush.
Who have split again, I think. Maybe.
It's so weird, week in, week out, how they have been doing the Bobby Lashley, Leo Rush stuff, because it's like Leo Rush completely redeems himself, and then, Jeff, you mentioned on the last show we taped that online, they went ahead and got several beats ahead of this and had tensione between Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush, but when we were doing Raw this week, no tension at all before the match. They're totally cool. Leo Rush is totally on board. Lashley seems totally cool. And then we do Lashley once again leaving Leo Rush in the ring so that we can garner sympathy. So, I do think we are going that direction. I don't know that we're necessarily going to get to a multi-man Intercontinental Championship match with Leo Rush in it, though.
I am more amazed that Finn Balor continues to be popular.
Yeah.
After
with
what
so
they
little,
continue to
with
do
so
with him.
Little, yeah. They don't even have a good reason to bring out the demon at WrestleMania this year. Those people are probably not even that. They might get the demon, but there's a chance they might not even get the demon Finn Balor.
He's a plot device to heat up Braun Strowman again, and Braun Strowman's going to be in a battle royal that nobody cares about. Because nobody cares about the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
No, but what's
ever.
Even better about Braun Strowman being in that Battle Royal is his justification for why he wants to be in that Battle Royal. Remember that?
No, go ahead.
That was because of the Saturday Night Live guys. They made him so angry that he wants to beat people up, so he's entering the Battle Royal so that everyone who's in the locker room can get his hands. He's a babyface.
So either Saturday Night Live guy wins it, or they tease the Curt Hawkins winning it to break the streak, and he gets thrown out by Braun, ding, 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 trophy. And again, any way you slice it, Braun Strowman is a comedy figure at WrestleMania again. Second year in a row. Because last year he won the tag team titles with an 8-year-old kid.
He remains popular, but this has been a massive cooling off of this guy, who at one point seemed poised to be a serious face of this brand in, you know, the next generation. Like, you know, New Japan has traditionally had, you know, it's four or five aces. Braun Strowman could have been one of those guys on the marquee and kind of in that title consideration. It might still be heated up to that point again, but this is a real trough in his career right now.
Give me the other results of Raw, because I'm
Elias defeats No Way Jose.
Who cares?
Yeah, No Way Jose, he needed the Chicago Cubs shirt to make sure that he was not booed. We had Kurt Angle versus Chad Gable in a rather lengthy match.
That's what I want to talk about. Let me ask you this, because I am mixed now that they're coming out and saying that Kurt Angle's opponent won't be Baron Corbin. I am dead certain by that promo that was poorly delivered, because that's what Kurt can't deliver a promo anymore. That's a dirty secret nobody wants to admit. because he's so stuffed up, and he just goes through his lines and runs through them with a big thing, and
And they're overwriting him. They need to just let him go out and give him bullet points and just let this guy kind of speak and not have to sit there and think about the entirety of his dialogue and trying to hit every single word.
But if you look at the text of his promo, they were counting on, I don't just want to wrestle someone. I want someone I can beat. They were hoping for people to pop right there. And when they announced Baron Corbin and the audience groaned, that was not an expected reaction from these people, I think. I think they thought, oh, good, we'll be able to, we'll be happy.
Well,
because
a babyface says, I want one last challenge, not someone who will be an easy gomer for me on a high profile stage a la Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, and then they beat Baron Corbin.
Right.
Dude, who do you think he faces?
I think Corbin gets pulled from this, and I think...
I do, too.
Maybe, just maybe it ends up being John Cena, and it's kind of like a little mirroring of how Cena came into the business, and maybe Kurt Angle gets the win on, like, the Olympic Slam on John Cena, and we have a big sentimental moment.
I think with the U.S. title match being made a one-on-one between Rey and Samoa Joe this week, I think... The original plan was to have John Cena be part of a U.S. title match. I think you're right. I think it has to be Cena versus Angle.
And it's less of a match, per se, and more of a greatest hits. These two guys having one last spot, lots of standing and staring at each other to begin the match, and John carries Kurt to a totally fine, nice, sentimental moment at the end of the match.
Ricochet beats Jinder Mahal.
Classic. I'm going to save that one. I'm going to go back and review
Jinder's
it later.
Big. Let's put Ricochet in there, and he'll look impressive because he's a smaller guy.
Jinder Mahal is a former SmackDown champion, and this is a big win for Ricochet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Dana Brooke versus Ronda Rousey. Now, let me just say, Jeff, Dana Brooke screaming while in that arm submission was awesome. And it was some of the best Dana Brooking I have ever seen.
Ronda's changed up her arm bar, becoming a heel. It's more real. And it might be real. She might just be hazing people in that ring. I have a problem with Travis Brown being part of this.
Why?
Yeah, here it is. Brown has two sons from a previous marriage. Brown married... In January 2015, in July 2015, the wife posted Instagram photos showing multiple bruises on her body allegedly caused by Brown and claimed he had allegedly beat her.
Brown's a very large man, as you all saw on Monday. So, I mean, that guy throwing any sort of punch would be painful.
Look, he's a real UFC fighter. Getting him involved in the women's division feud is problematic with even if he's innocent before, you know, even if charges weren't pressed. To me, the specter of the story is enough where you don't want him anywhere near this women's feud, but he's going to get involved.
Especially as a bodyguard. The idea is that he's there to be the body man for Ronda Rousey. So does that mean he's going to strike Becky Lynch at some point or thwart Becky Lynch from attacking Ronda? How does that play out? And what does that look like optically?
I am honestly intrigued by how Ronda feels about professional wrestling right now. Because if they had presented her like this the entire time, I think she'd still be happy. I think she'd be more than happy in the WWE. I think their idea to play on her celebrity and make her a babyface, when you know that she's kind of a crank in real life, really did damage to the character and may have done damage to her love of professional wrestling, because I tend to think she did take some of the booze a little personally.
Yes,
I thought she
because
she'd be appreciated
the smiley
more.
I love you guys so much thing is such an overperformance for her to begin with. She goes out there and she doesn't necessarily want adulation like that, not in like kind of like the pure mentality of it. She wants to be liked and she wants to be approved of, but she's not someone who is like the hug all the fans type of person. She's,
yeah, did Ronda Rousey ever give off the impression that she was happy-go-lucky?
Yeah, it's ever? Just never been her. So, like, this has always been a bit of a force for her. We know that she has a bit of a touchy personality, and so to receive any level of rejection, like, those things all conspire that she wouldn't handle that kind of rejection well, and lo and behold, she didn't. But I think if she had come in here and, frankly, had been saying things like, wrestling is a joke pretty much the entire time, and that was sort of the premise of her run here, that she didn't take any of these wrestlers seriously, and she came in and she dominated the whole world, too, and sort of, like, made it look like, look, I own this business, and then finally the knight in shining armor shows up, and it's Becky Lynch. That's actually a really interesting and compelling storyline. I think Ronda would have really sunk her teeth into that, and the crowd would have loved hating Ronda Rousey.
Yes, I agree. They wanted her to be a big babyface, and they just messed it up. And speaking of which, we'll shift over to SmackDown, I think, because I don't think there's anything more on Raw that's worth even mentioning.
No, I think that's about right.
But then you have the other two members of this triple threat. Basically coming out there and Kevin Owens just says, okay, ladies, fight. And they do. And you're just like, I would have much rather seen them building something here rather than we have to bring them out for the crowd to cheer for them and then they'll fight a bit.
This talk show convention thing that Vince is just so
They obsessed. Love it.
They love it. It's very much a Vince thing, though, because it goes all the way back to the 1980s. And
yep.
I was doing research for something else, and you remember the old talk show host Morton Downey?
Yes.
That is, I think, a big inspiration for Vince on this stuff.
I know. It goes back even further. I mean, Carson and maybe even Steve Allen, because Tuesday Night Titans in the mid-80s, he wanted it to be legitimately good.
He was watching that trash TV too. You know what I'm saying? Like that stuff where, and like I bring up Morton Downey specifically because like his show is very clearly worked. But it was presented as totally real. And I think Vince probably saw that and was like, ooh, I could do a little something like that with my product as well.
Well, Morton Downey has been at WrestleMania, as you recall.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he always loved the talk show format. He did that with Tuesday Night Titans. He tried to make Bobby Heenan a weird talk show host as well with the Bobby Heenan show at one point on USA.
Right.
And it's just one of those weird things where he understands the conventions of it. But I don't think he's ever watched enough television, at least in modern times, to get what makes a good show like that.
Or how that would port into a wrestling product.
Like,
there's
the
a way to
sports.
Do that at times, but this show crutches on this convention so much. We have the Moment of Bliss, we have Miz TV, we have the KO show, we have, what was Y2J's show? Moment of Jericho?
The list or whatever. Dean Ambrose had a show at one point.
Oh yeah, the Ambrose Asylum. Remember the Ambrose Asylum?
The Ambrose
Asylum. Everybody gets a talk show regardless of whether or not they should have one. Elias's segment is almost kind of like a talk show.
I think there's a couple things. There's things that, but there's also, if you remember all those moments from the 80s that were big, they were on these types of things, you know, Shawn kicking Marty through the mirror on the barber shop. Piper hitting Snook in the head with a coconut on Piper's pit. You know, the Brother Love show where, you know, the snake there, where, you know, people get their hand caught in the coffin or a snake bites or the snake pit where Jake lures. I forgot if it was Macho Man or Hogan, but they were all those types of classic moments were on these talk show type things.
Brother Love is another good example of Vince seeing something on TV. What's that? Jim and Tammy.
Televangelism.
Yeah, televangelism generally. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's out there, but it's like Kevin Owens. It's just like, hey, I'm here. You two ladies fight. I'll see you later. Oh, and good luck, Kofi.
And he's kind of a baby face, but he's also needling people, and then also recapping this Twitter feud And that dialogue was agonizing. And Kevin Owens is one of the best promos in this company, but he couldn't save what was on those cards.
The constant refrain of babyfaces wishing Kofi good luck while not actually doing anything to help him succeed. This is another office politics thing where, man, hope you get that promotion, but if you don't, I'm here. I'd love to get that too. So if you fall on your face, I won't really care. It's so off. It felt like such office politics to kind of go, oh yeah, good luck, Kofi.
And it would be cool if it was presented like that, but it's not even presented like that. It's presented as though what they're doing is necessary and sufficient, and they've totally had Kofi's back with this. What they should be doing and what their mentality presents as is that when the injustices are done to Kofi Kingston, they should be having a mutiny. If it was presented like you're saying, like it was, I hope you get that promotion, but if you don't, I mean, that means there's a job still open and I need a promotion. That would be one thing, but that's not even what they're doing. Like, The Miz was earnestly wishing Kofi well, which was sort of unearned.
Going back to earlier in the show, I'm a little mixed on the point that you made about the Daniel Bryan promo on Kofi, because I like when bad guys are in the right, but they were so much in the right that I was siding with Daniel Bryan.
That's my point. That's my point, is that Daniel Bryan won me over. The logic was very fundamentally sound here. Kofi had
a
shot.
Screw you, Kofi. Screw you. You were put into this thing. This should be Mustafa Ali's spot. I'm just like, they should thank every being on earth that they did not put Mustafa Ali on this show after that promo. What are your feelings on gauntlet matches?
I was worried that this was going to overstay its welcome and perhaps expose Kofi Kingston a little bit and take him swimming for a little too long. And I think that this did. The cast of characters in this gauntlet match is so predictable. It's just, you know, I like Sheamus and I like Cesaro, and I think Cesaro is a great wrestler and they've underutilized him and I could go on. But Cesaro is always casted in these gauntlet matches, and I have seen him have the Cesaro gauntlet match so many times, including with Daniel Bryan. And I think that's part of what they're trying to do. They want to make this mirror the Daniel Bryan push, but it was just a bit much.
As a gimmick, I've learned to come to accept, because at first I hated the thought that a superstar could have 5 matches in one night and still be going strong at the end. I think it devalues talent. This gauntlet was a little too top-heavy for me. I would have kept Samoa Joe and Randy Orton out of this because they both have singles matches on the Mania card.
I agree with that.
Keep this to tag team wrestlers, and then you have an out by saying, well, they're used to being in tag teams. They might not be as good as a singles wrestler, which was always the out in the NWA.
Not having the Usos as heels going into this, I think, is a small mistake.
That was weird.
Yeah, right? It was weird to see them chummy with the New Day, and they would have made perfect sense as people who would be in this gauntlet match that Kofi could beat credibly, but also have an aura of toughness and an established rivalry with the New Day, and like a reason why they might have a little bit of a standing vendetta with them. And to your point too, the tag team wrestlers would make sense because that's who the New Day has been feuding with. So there's a little bit of built-in story with pretty much whoever you pull from.
But God, did this crowd want it. This crowd was great tonight on SmackDown, I thought. I thought they were into everything. Once Miz on that promo, which wasn't that bad. It wasn't great, but it was pretty
great,
darn good.
But I like the frame on this story,
yeah.
Right? That Miz earned everything, and you kind of have to ignore like the real world or whatever, right? But the idea that Miz really took himself from nothing and made himself into relevance, and Shane is a great athlete, but has also been handed everything. Like, I actually like that tension. And I like that we're playing into the idea that Miz is not the most talented guy in the world either, but like he's been able to make up with that with hard work. We're leaning into truths, and so even though the actual content inside of the promo wasn't that good or the dialogue, the content and the themes, they were.
That said, when he dropped that first Kofi and the crowd woke up and said, oh yeah, that's right, this is what this entire episode is about, and started getting into it.
Well, we were told last week that we were going to be starting this show with the Gauntlet match. Remember, that was the end of last week's SmackDown.
I forgot about that, but nevertheless, this crowd was hot for it. They were hot throughout the entire Gauntlet match. They get what they want. Everybody's happy. And here comes Vince. And we have to throw another obstacle in the way. And here comes Daniel Bryan. And of course he wins. And now we have to find another reason to heat him back up. You had the story. You had it. He's hot. He's overcome the odds. We keep Daniel Bryan and Kofi separated for 2 weeks. We have the contract signing or whatever.
Just have him win this gauntlet. They're overriding this. There's just too much twisting and turning at the expense of the main character.
Yeah, and you've made Randy Orton and Samoa Joe kind of a little bit lesser going into WrestleMania for their singles matches.
Kofi's still a part of New Day. Like, in terms of, he doesn't stand alone from them. Like, they wish him well and everything, and it's good to have friends. I like that he has friends. It's good that his friends support him because it makes me want to support him more because I see his friends rooting him on. But I also need him visually to look different right now while he's on his personal quest.
Yeah, and it gets also back to the, man, all these baby faces should just walk out. Because if Kofi's going to be treated like this after 11 years, what makes them think that their situation is going to be better?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It gives them stupid baby face syndrome in mass because they're not connecting the dots.
Well, it also goes to the thing of there's also a rampant theme in WWE where you should be thankful that WWE gave you a job, because otherwise you wouldn't be making any money in professional wrestling.
Right. Oh, and also you love the brand. You've always wanted to represent the brand. And so, you know, again, hate the company, love the brand.
And when I looked at the clock and it was 6:53, you knew Vince was coming out, and still I was yelling, don't do it. Just go off the air with the celebration.
I wanted AJ Styles to just come out and help Kofi. I mean, to me, the whole angle here tonight should have been, and the out should have been,
the baby faces should have all come out there and put them on the shoulders.
Right.
Like Dusty Rhodes winning the world title
and
or something.
They force the issue and they say, we have our matches. You can't punish all of us.
Yes.
So we're going to force the issue. And if, Vince, you want to punish all of us next week, then, oh, by the way, that's always a great episode of professional wrestling. The boss punishes everybody. Like, that one's usually a fun one because it usually presages some other fun event. But then you have that to go to. But, God, just get Kofi over the finish line this week.
Oh no, you know they're not fun, Chris. You know what they are? They're the well, we're gonna have the Shield versus the rest of the entire heel locker room.
I know. Okay, there's a way to do them where they're impenetrably stupid, but there's another way to do them where you start setting up storylines and you set up a big comeuppance spot. You have the mutiny, you have the Empire Strikes Back, and then you have the Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, okay. I can go with that. I just the fewer McMahons involved, the better.
I don't like heel McMahons as a major feature on this product, and I was told we were fixing things and getting things right in December, Jeff. I was told things had been going wrong because of heel management figures, Jeff. You were supposed to fix this, Jeff.
All will be right if Virginia wins the tournament. Okay. That's all I'm saying. I will suffer through this for another year if Virginia wins the NCAA tournament. Otherwise, I'm out of here in December, I think.
You can follow me at CHRISNOVEMBRINO, Chris Novembrino. And you can follow Jeff Carpgame at CRAP, that's Crap Game, 13. On Twitter. And then, of course, my other shows, Don't Worry About the Government, which you can find at don'tworry.tv and on iTunes and Stitcher. We'll be back on Thursday to take a look at 205 Live, NXT US, and NXT UK. But until then, bye-bye.
Go Hoos.
Wrestling Podcast, there is a new shining star with great interviews, analysis, music, and me, Matt Kuhn, on Total Engagement. Go to any podcast platform to listen today.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.